Virgin Mary by Joan Baez, one of the thousands of works of art inspired across the millennia by Mary, the mother of Jesus. Mary, who suffers silently as Jesus is tortured to death. But what if Mary spoke her grief? What if this grieving mother could tell her story? What would that be? That's the question behind a one-woman play called The Testament of Mary. It's by the famous Irish writer Colm Toibin, and it's based on his very potent little novel published back in 2012, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. That one's called The Testament of Mary. And there's quite a buzz around this play. It's had a big season on in Broadway, and it's just opened at the Sydney Theatre Company. Alison White plays Mary. Good morning, Alison.
Good morning, Michael.
Nice to have you here. And Imara Savage is the director. Hi.
Hello.
Why are you doing this, Imara? What prompted you and the team at the STC to put this one on?
Well, it was brought to me by one of the producers, Rachel, and she had seen the version on Broadway. And I think she just really responded to the writing. And she brought it to me and said, can you have a look at this, have a read? And I read it. And similarly, I responded to kind of what great writing it was and how interesting it was to take somebody that, you know, has been an icon and kind of enshrined in myth throughout the ages and to hear her speak as a
well,
human being.
Who's ethereal?
You know, definitely ethereal and kind of conceived in a lot of kind of abstractions in a way. You know, we don't think of her as this kind of real, grounded, flesh and blood human being.
So, Alison, you're playing this part. Do you have a religious background yourself? Were you raised in a church?
I went to a religious school, so I was I'm well versed in the Bible stories, but I'm not myself a religious person,
a person of faith,
a person of faith necessarily, but neither is this Mary, really.
No, well, that's what's so interesting about it. I mean, she doesn't, well, in the book, I haven't seen the play, but in the book, she doesn't name her son. She just talks about
and
him.
In the book, she is a person of faith, but she finds comfort and solace in the figure of Artemis, in the goddess Artemis, which I found really interesting, but that's not in the play.
Right. So tell us, Imara, tell us where this play is set.
Well, it's set in the version that Colm Toibin has wrote is set in Ephesus. It's about 20 years after Jesus was crucified, and it's Mary at the end. You get the sense that she's at the end of her life, and this is her kind of final opportunity before she dies to speak her truth. But the version that we're staging is set in a kind of we're taking design references more from liminal spaces, museums, mausoleums, places that are kind of have a feeling more of the enshrined, I suppose.
Oh, I see. So it's the Mary that we know speaking, the sort of, the venerated Mary, the iconic Mary speaking to us out of those places where normally she is silent. Is that the idea?
That's exactly right. Well, she's kind of stripped down in the beginning of her of her iconography, and then she speaks to us from this place, steps down from the pedestal, quite literally, and speaks her truth.
You know, when Colin was on the show back in 2012, this is when the novel came out, I asked him who Mary was talking to in this story, and this is what he said.
I suppose it's almost like the breaking of silence or the breaking of glass. She finds herself in her old age being guarded and protected and finding that her minders are really nothing but trouble, and she has time and she begins. So there's a sense that she's talking to the air.
She's talking to the air, Alison.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Imara and I were just talking about this, how difficult it was to place who she was talking to, and because it changes it changes throughout the piece. All of a sudden she's talking to her cousin or her, you know, Marcus, or again, because it's memory. She's talking to the air. She is talking to the air.
Well, you're on air.
I am.
So can we have a little sense of what it sounds like when Mary...
I am. I will start at the beginning because it was very difficult to sort of pluck out a piece in the middle of it, or because, I mean, anyway, so I will start from the beginning and I'll give you a little taste of where she comes from. They appear more often now, both of them. And on every visit they seem more impatient with me and with the world. There is a brutality boiling in their blood, which I've seen before, and can smell, as an animal which is being hunted can smell. But I'm not being hunted now, not anymore. I'm being cared for and questioned softly and watched. They want what happened to live forever. What is being written down, they say, will change the world. The world? I asked. All of it. All of it. They think I do not know the elaborate nature of their desires, but nothing escapes me now, except sleep. Sleep escapes me. Is that enough, Michael, or do you want more?
No, it was lovely.
It's so beautifully written. And we were talking about, there's two versions of the play. There's one called The Testament, which Colm wrote first for the Dublin Festival. And then when it disappeared, the play season, all the rest of it, he really felt the need to write the novel. And this version of the play has a lot more from the novella, doesn't it, Amara? So it's
this is the version he wrote post the novel,
which was on Broadway. I didn't know that. So he wrote a play first, then wrote the novel.
Yep.
And then having written the novel, thought, oh, that went well. He went back and thought, I'll have another crack at that play.
Yeah, and I think he did that in collaboration with Deborah Warner and Fiona Shaw.
She's a lot tougher in this version. She's a lot tougher. In the first version, she doesn't mention the word crucifixion. In this one, she does.
Right.
She mentions it a few times. She doesn't speak his name again.
Now, these two men that you were referring to there, Alison, or that she's referring to, these are John and Paul, aren't they?
Yes, that's right.
These are the two men who are kind of...
Yes.
Almost keeping her under wraps because they're developing the orthodoxy that will become Christianity.
Whereas she's got this
mother's story, which is, I don't know why it had to end like this.
Exactly. And they're trying to get her story from her, but they're writing their own version. She can't read. She doesn't know what they're writing down. So this is her time to speak. This is her time to speak, and she is speaking it out of frustration and anger, and grief, and a real sense that this boy had been manipulated in a sense. That's not exactly a truth that people of faith want to hear. But this is her version, and she's speaking her truth, and the truth must be spoken once in the world, she says.
Yeah, well, Mary's particularly loved by Catholics. I mean, within the Catholic Church, she's the focus for something that looks very like worship. People pray to her, so she's venerated.
Yeah.
Have there been any suggestions in Sydney that you might be crossing a line here, that this could be a sort
of
heresy?
Look, I haven't, for my headspace, playing the role, I haven't entered into that realm. I'm sure that they're getting emails and complaints, and I don't know. I don't need to know.
Imara, are you protecting Alison?
No, look, I think that there were big protests in America when they took the version from London to America, Fiona Shaw and Deborah Warner's version. But most of the people, as Tobin says himself, he said most of the people who were protesting hadn't seen the play. Some of them thought it was a movie, and I think it was just that there was this real kind of... Well, I asked a Catholic priest here, actually. I said, look, what is it about it that is so controversial? And he was saying he really loved the novel and thought it was a very kind of compassionate rendering of Mary. But he said it's just that, she is in a sense the female female personification of God, you know, and so for her to speak, for her to be humanized is controversial in and of itself.
Yes.
Besides the fact that she then, you know, is skeptical about various miracles and she refers to Jesus' disciples as a bunch of misfits, you know. So she has a very different slant on the story. But he said the most controversial thing is that you're taking someone who is a god and you're essentially rendering them human.
Well, rendering her as a mother who has watched her son be tortured to death.
Yes.
That's
yes.
exactly right. Yeah. Full of grief and yeah. And within that grief is rage and cynicism and a whole lot of other words that you don't usually associate with somebody who is kind of perceived as Tobin said before, silent in the first instance, and then also, you know, pious and accepting and benevolent and all of those things that she still manages to be, but Tobin's given her the kind of full spectrum of what it is to be human and experience grief.
On RN, this is Books and Arts, and we're talking to actor Alison White and director Imara Savage about the production of The Testament of Mary, which is by the famous Irish writer Colm Tóibín. In the novel, one of the truths that Mary has to face about herself is that she's fled Jerusalem before Jesus was taken down from the cross. So that famous scene of her in the as the Pietà, as the mother holding the dead body of Christ, that didn't happen because she shot through because Christians were being persecuted or they could see the persecution coming and she fled for safety and she's dealing with that. Is that an aspect of the play?
Yes, it is. Yeah. She carries an enormous amount of guilt for that in the play. But she's quite pragmatic about it as well, I think, that she fled because she wanted to survive. and she has real regrets about that. I don't know whether I should. I mean, she dreams that he came back to life, which is a beautiful scene in the play, a beautifully written scene in the play. And I think that that she got some comfort from dreaming that he came back to life, and she was able to see that in some sense he was over the pain and that he was at peace. So she gets some comfort from that dream that she had, but she wasn't there.
It does sound relentless.
I get a little crabby now, man.
I mean, I wonder whether relentlessness actually is a quality that the play is searching for.
That's exactly right. It is a relentless quality, that relentlessness of living with that trauma and living with that grief. It's a happy piece.
I think Tobin said he was teaching a course on relentlessness when he started writing this piece.
A course on relentlessness. Who takes relentlessness?
Well, he said he kind of gave him this title, the course, this title, because he thought he'd get some really interesting students.
And also, it's quite competitive, wasn't it, Imara? There's a competitive nature. It was teaching at like some university in America, and this is like these courses are really really competitive, you know, and it's really awfully. If you don't get anyone signing up for them. So he thought he would choose a topic like relentlessness, and he'd get a certain type of person, but he would get people, and he got a really interesting group of a bunch of people, and he started with this notion of Mary and her relentless grief, and that's where the idea sort of sprung from.
And he was looking at the quality of voices in Greek playwriting, so people like Electra and Antigone, Medea. So it definitely has the quality of a woman who has been powerless up until this point, but finds her power through the spoken word.
Oh, you could make one of those 12-hour shows, you know, one of those ones that just goes forever, of all the relentless women in Western theatre.
I'm only up for 80 minutes of it, all right?
Yeah. How are you surviving that? I mean, you're on stage for 80 minutes, is it? It does sound exhausting.
Yeah, look, it's look, I've only done 1 week, Michael. We should ask me in about five.
Well, you're sounding great, Alison, let me say.
I've got to re-rehearse Faith Healer in my last week, so that's going to be an interesting little because I'll be re-rehearsing Faith Healer for Melbourne and then performing Mary.
Well, let's just explain that Faith Healer is also an Irish play that also involves monologues by an extremely famous playwright whose name I've just forgotten. It is
Brian Friel.
Brian Friel. Yeah, so you're actually doing the same kind of gig back to back.
Yes, yes. I finished Faith Healer on the Sunday and started rehearsal for Mary on the Monday.
You're an Irish monologue specialist.
I'm becoming the expert. And we're rehearsing it for Melbourne stage, which we'll stage in a few, well, March, I suppose. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about courses in relentlessness. I think I'd like to teach one. Because if you're the lecturer in relentlessness, you could just go on and on and on. You know, the hour
just
would
do
pass.
Irish monologue after Irish monologue after Irish stop. Monologue.
Well, congratulations on it all. It sounds absolutely marvellous. I'm hearing that it's fantastic. So thanks so much for coming in, despite the relentlessness and the early hour of the morning for theatre folk.
Thank you for having us.
Alison White, she performs as the relentless Mary in The Testament of Mary, and Amara Savage is the director of the show. You can catch it at the Sydney Theatre Company through until the 25th of February. The details of that are on our website. And the interesting twist to this is that the Malthouse in Melbourne are staging their own production later in the year. That's on in November, just in time for Christmas. And Pamela Rabe's doing the role there, so that'll be an interesting contrast, won't it, between two very different and very talented actors. Anyway, there's a link to that production on our website as well. And you can also find a link there to my conversation with Colm Toybean, where we had a chat to him back in, 2012, when the novel first came out. I'm Michael Cathcart, and this is Books and Arts.